We're now more than 2 months into Michigan's coronavirus crisis. And as the weeks have passed, we've been thinking about some of the people we've spent time with whose lives were thrown into chaos by the pandemic. All over Michigan, renters are entering a critical stage. With only a few sectors of the economy getting back online, rent coming due, and the governor's eviction ban scheduled to sunset May 15th. Crystal Michelle Brasseur is a student who lives in Detroit. Until recently, she was a server at the Monarch Club, a high-end restaurant. And like millions of other people, she has not been able to work since March. We wanted to call her to hear about what's going on. Crystal, welcome back to Stateside.
Hi, thank you for having me.
So how are you doing?
Well, I've been doing a lot better than a lot of other people I know in my situation, I feel like.
Yeah. Have you been able to find other work?
I haven't been able to find other work, but I'm actually one of the very lucky few who's been able to get approved by unemployment and actually receive funds.
What's your secret?
Wake up at 6 a.m. and call them until 8.
That was how you did it, was keeping at it. Can I ask how much help those payments have been? Again, you worked in the service industry, and I know sometimes unemployment doesn't take into account the tips that are really the staple of servers' wages.
Yeah, I definitely, without the unemployment pandemic assistance, I think without that, I wouldn't have been able to survive. I'd probably be living back with my mom. But because of the extra $600 that we're receiving a week, because, again, I don't have children except for, like, my cats, I live in a very cheap, small studio apartment, I'm able to, like, stay pretty comfortable and afloat right now. But I know a lot of other people who are in my scenario who don't have the same, I guess, situations going on aren't even anywhere close to feeling secure like I do right now.
Now, the last time we talked, your landlord didn't sound extra ready to negotiate. Has there been any change in the tone of those conversations?
Well, not entirely. It's kind of the same. What they have changed is they're actually, they've taken away any fees that are associated with a late fee, given that you're already up to date on your rent. I think it's like a $100 late fee if you don't pay your bills and all that stuff. So that's really the only change that I've seen. Other than that, they just are reaching out to people and saying, well, if you need to create a payment plan, we can create a payment plan. But I don't think it's really anything else beyond that.
But rent is still due.
Yeah, rent is definitely still due. They remind us of that.
Do you know if anybody else in your building is in trouble with that?
You know, I'm actually not aware. I hardly ever leave my little unit. I haven't really talked to very many people. I've talked to my maintenance guy a few times, and I think he's doing okay. I worry about him because he's a little bit older. And I worry about how he's going to be doing with all this and how they're treating him. But for the most part, it seems like most people are just staying in their unit. And I haven't, at least on my floor, I haven't noticed any notices on people's doors or anything like that. So I don't think they're being progressive at all if they are potentially kicking people out. I think they must be doing it under the hush because I haven't seen anything.
Crystal, when we talked, you said that you were pursuing an education degree at Wayne State University. What's going on with that? Have you been able to take any online classes, or are you just putting things on hold for now?
For right now, things are on hold. I did finish the last of my semester. I'm not sure how long things are going to have to be on hold. And that's really the big thing that's up in the air right now, is that I did get accepted to finish the second part of my program, which is like a internship that I would be doing in a school. But I'm not exactly sure what that's going to look like in the fall.
Does that feel like something that would be safe to do, getting into the classroom?
No, not if we don't have a vaccine or anything going on. I don't know if it would be safe.
What if the school was doing some sort of hybrid or online learning situation? Would you feel better about that?
I don't know. How can you have a hybrid learning situation when you have students that are in public education don't all have access to Wi-Fi or computers? That, to me, seems very nice for people who are from an upper middle class and have money and are able to do that kind of learning, and there are parents that are able to stay home with their students. But, I mean, if I was an educator right now, I wouldn't even want to take on a student teacher if that was the situation. If I had to do a hybrid class with my juniors who are barely showing up to school as it is, and now I have to teach a student, like a college student, how to be a teacher in these times, and I don't even know what I'm doing as a teacher, I don't know.
Is there anything else that's been on your mind that I didn't ask you about?
No, you kind of covered it. Just like, what is school going to look like in the future?
Yeah, for sure.
You know, because for me right now, that's really the biggest fear. And also, too, of what's going to happen is it when this pandemic goes beyond July and people aren't receiving that extra $600 a week anymore. Because, I mean, before that, I had only been approved for $200 from unemployment. And I definitely $200 a week would not have paid my bills, let alone anyone else's.
Crystal, thank you so much for talking to us about your situation. And we'll check back in with you this summer and see what's new.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for calling, April.
Crystal Michelle Brasseur is a student at Wayne State University who lives in Detroit. Renters aren't the only ones in uncharted territory right now. Property owners and lenders are too. Now that we're a few months into the governor's stay-at-home order, we wanted to check back in with Owen Lee. He's the co-owner and CEO of Success Mortgage Partners in Plymouth, Michigan. Owen Lee, welcome back to Stateside.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Hey, the last time we talked, you mentioned something that really stuck with me. You said it's very important to stay in touch with your lender. If folks think they're not going to be able to make a payment, it's just important to get that out there up front, that lenders will want to know sooner rather than later. Would you say that that happened?
I think it's happening with most people. When Congress passed the CARES Act, there was some pretty liberal language in there about the ability to have mortgage forbearance. And mortgage forbearance has been authorized for those affected by the COVID virus, either economically or health-wise. You can get mortgage forbearance for somewhere between 3 and 12 months, depending upon your circumstances. But it is very important to talk to your mortgage servicer about that, because if you don't call them, the forbearance is not automatic. And what happens to you and your credit history varies greatly. If you just don't make your payment, the rules are the same. They're not going to assume forbearance. They're going to assume that you're in default. They're going to report to the credit bureaus that reality, and it will significantly harm your credit.
Oh, and maybe we should take a minute and talk about what forbearance means.
Forbearance is not forgiveness. Those payments and that money that's owed from the borrower to the mortgage company do not go away. They can be temporarily suspended while you're in forbearance, but part of the process is discussing how those payments are going to be made up. Everybody, I would encourage them to have a conversation with their mortgage servicer about what that might look like if you're considering forbearance. There are several plans out there. The number one plan is to try and collect all the payments at the end of the forbearance period, which obviously is not great for the vast majority of borrowers that enter forbearance. There are some double payment options to catch people up. And there are some options to place some of that liability toward the end of the mortgage. But I think what's different now from what was prescribed back in the 2008 to 2012 period is the option to just automatically take those payments and place them at the end of the mortgage is not nearly as readily available as it was in the past. So it's very important that the borrowers understand the financial impact of a forbearance and how it's going to affect them as they come out of the forbearance, and use that information to make the best decision for them and their family as they decide whether to take advantage of what was prescribed in the CARES Act or not.
Now, folks may be aware that mortgages are almost certainly, after you sign a mortgage, they're sold to other companies that service the mortgage over the time of the loan. That's referred to as the secondary market. Can you give us a sense of what's going on, just a brief overview of what's happening in the secondary market right now?
The appetite for mortgages on the secondary market is still very strong. That's helped greatly by the Federal Reserve. Beginning really in earnest the week of March 23rd, the Federal Reserve started to purchase billions of dollars worth of mortgages, referred to on that market as mortgage-backed securities. They're really the biggest buyer out there right now. They're still purchasing somewhere between $30 and $40 billion a week as we speak. That has had a tremendous stabilizing effect on the market. Interest rates are still very low. They've stayed very low. Most of the interest rates that our company is doing is somewhere in the mid threes. You can get down to the low threes depending upon your credit history and the type of loan that you want to get. The refinance activity is very strong. The purchase activity is down about 30 to 40%, but that's due mostly to the various governors' stay-at-home orders or shelter-in-place orders. Has really had a chilling effect on real estate sales, although even real estate sales have been strong considering the environment in which they're operating. But the demand for new mortgages on the secondary market is still very strong.
Owen, thank you so much. We appreciate your time.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
Owen Lee of Success Mortgage Partners in Plymouth. With us now is Andre Watson. He owns several rental properties in the city of Detroit, and we called him up to ask him what's going on with him and his relationships. Andre, welcome to Stateside.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Will you tell me a little bit about the properties you own?
Yeah, just regular residential properties in the city of Detroit, few outside of the city, but predominantly in the city, and I've owned them for several years. I've always tried to create a special relationship with my tenants. It's not always been easy, but yeah, that's been my approach to renting.
What was on your mind in March when Governor Whitmer put stay-at-home restrictions in place that shut down most people's form of income?
First and foremost, it was just a matter of general concern about health first. It was the first time where we had to go to our human trait first, not just the arrangement as landlord-tenant. And I just wanted to make sure everybody was safe and okay. That was the first thought. And then I started to hear rumblings about the concern about people's inability to get to their jobs or even just a general, you know, fear or even the thought of just not paying rent. And so that, you know, of course, alerted me to my landlord part where I guess I kind of realized that it's the solution has to be one of give and take. That was the first instinct.
Do you know if any of the folks living in your properties had health concerns related to the virus?
Yes, I do. No, they have not, thank God. But one is a senior and she's really worked up about the whole experience and It's been very trying on her.
So what have you been in a position to do for tenants right now? Are you in a place where you have to ask them to pay their rent every month? Or is there any wiggle room possible in terms of your situation?
Yeah, I just use each case individually. If there's been displacement of jobs or if there are any programs that I hear of where they can get assistance that they may need, then I, you know, forward information. I keep the communication lines open. That's the one thing I really press and stress with them, just stay communicating with me because we can get through it no matter what. So I do leave room in case they can't pay, but if they're able to, I'd expect them to. But at the same time, you know, this is just the beginning of this. So this whole dance that we're doing with our tenants, it will become a norm. There'll be further displacement for other reasons.
When you first became a landlord, did you ever imagine that you might be in a situation where people would be out of work for so long and you'd have to negotiate a situation like this?
No, never. As a landlord, no, as a citizen, I never thought we would experience anything that touched to this extent. So no, never.
Tell me a little bit about what you've heard from people about their situation, the things that they're doing to make ends meet or to try to make sure they can get you some money when rent is due.
There are several programs. I was pretty impressed with the way the city of Detroit had a very responsive system, not only with being somewhat cutting edge with national notoriety and testing, not all the way there where we need to be by no means, but still, I thought it was pretty impressive to see the mayor's response. And so a lot of these programs I would forward to my tenants and I'd also engage them about their employment during this time. And first and foremost, how they're doing. But I'd also keep them empowered because we do have to come out of this to some form of normalcy. So I'm appreciative of the resources that I have seen thus far.
Andre, have you had to talk to any lenders about the schedule for your payments on your properties?
Yes, I have. I was proactive there because I thought that maybe a buffer that I could then utilize to better take care of the relationships with the tenants in case there, you know, some of the payments will need to be missed. So I figured I would try to grab that comfort of knowing that I could have some level of reprieve, and then that could translate to the tenant and give them a buffer as well. And everybody can be okay for a while.
How receptive did you find lenders to making some kind of arrangement?
Oddly enough, the larger ones, very receptive and very professional and engaging. The smaller lenders were a little bit still almost going for you know, going for that payment. And you could tell the difference. I normally, the larger, you know, lenders, you would expect to have pushback and resistance, but they were very receptive. The smaller ones that I deal with, they weren't. So I'm still working with a few of them there.
What would you say the biggest concerns are on your mind at the moment?
Biggest concerns is, what sense of normalcy will we eventually land with? And more importantly, the anxieties that people are experiencing. From dealing with tenants and the general public for a living, you get to leverage and learn how different people's lives are. And so, like, the senior tenant, her anxieties were so high, so I don't even know what her experiences in a form of normalcy will be. And then it's magnification or magnified by the disproportionate of African Americans, because some of my tenants are African American, and the disproportionate of African Americans, so they're experiencing death, inability to mourn, commonly first line as it relates to jobs where you can't leave your home. So it was pretty intense, I'd say.
One of the producers who works on our show, Laura Weber Davis, once heard you say that Detroit is like a pressure cooker and that the people who live in the city, Black residents, can only take so much downward and inward pressure from the systems around them. Systems that were built to foster inequity and racism, and that filters into housing. How would you say what's happening with the pandemic either does or doesn't play into the pressure cooker that already exists in Detroit?
Yeah, before we spoke of the systemic racism that has created a lot of this, you know, this pressure, if you will. And so I think with the whole virus scare and the disproportionate amounts of death, which is, you know, largely due to the circumstances of individuals within the city, which is actually out of their control, largely, because I just think it makes it even worse. And I hate to see like a double victimization occurring, but I do suspect that unless we stay courageous and alert, even during an emergency, that we will, you'll see a double amount of stress. Beyond that, you know, people are experiencing real-time death and exaggerations, you know, with high amount of people dying and not able to mourn and still not knowing how to function. So I really do pray that we as Americans choose to be better and actually take all of the valuable lessons that we can from this experience, because we can help systems while improving how we exist as a society. But if we go into denial, that would be the real threat.
I wanted to ask you about the governor's ban on evictions, which right now is scheduled to sunset later this week. I was wondering what that ban has meant for you and whether you think it should be continued.
I think that ban was very appropriately done. It was really disturbing to see the overreaction. And I, by the way, I do believe in free enterprise. And I do believe in for-profits, you know, stances. But I believe her position was very appropriate due to the severity of what we were suffering from as a state. And I also believe that the overreaction could be consequential, because I do believe we're in an experiment as far as a solution for the coronavirus. This is an experiment, so we have to observe it to see if it's actually worked or not. I think her being that absolute in what she was challenging us to do was really for our own good.
The point at which a landlord is willing to consider an eviction obviously varies a lot per the situation. but have any situations with your tenants gotten to the point where under different circumstances you would have been pursuing legal action?
Yes. Some tenants had not been able to pay for several months, or really so 2 months. But as long as they keep the lines of communications open, I'll work with them. And also, the displacement of eviction is so harsh economically on tenants or individuals, and then it trickles to the children. So as the landlord, we have to be responsible and challenge ourselves to go to a more, you know, a difficult place. But it's so consequential when you do an eviction, especially in a time where economic uncertainty is so high. It's just something I think it's a time for everyone to step up.
What does that mean? You said earlier it's important for us to stay courageous. What does that mean to you in the moment?
It means that if you see an opportunity for correction, challenge yourself not to revert back to a comfortable reaction, but choose to learn from the experience. And if poverty is something that you're staring at, you know, bring your innovations. Or even if households are challenged to stay more mindful of their spending, you know, absorb the lessons. I think it would be a tragedy if we only went back to how we were pre-coronavirus. I think we all have received valuable intel that allows us to be refined as a society, and then also a reminder of our levels of vulnerability, even in our existence. You know, so I think they're valuable lessons, and prayerfully we'll never experience something like this. But some of the lessons are very, very powerful.
I've heard an old saying, never let a crisis go to waste.
That's right. I believe in that.
You know, a lot of us look to our landlords as people who are more financially secure. And we think to ourselves, surely they've got the resources to, you know, to help me out. Does a situation like that scare you, where your own vulnerability maybe isn't isn't the first thing on tenants' minds?
It does. It's very concerning. And that's that whole integrity part where I value myself in not just creating a very mechanical relationship with tenants, but I pray that they too understand it's not just an easy experience for landlords as well. And I think, you know, policy and how we interact with tenants, we need to leave room for an awareness on both sides. Heavy-handed policies or that could be, you know, affecting landlords or, you know, abuse or mistreatment of tenants. Both we have to be cautious to.
How are you coping with fear right now?
Fear is manifesting for me with action. I've gone through, you know, my grief of whatnot. And now I need action, because as an African-American, I don't want to be a victim of this virus. So a proactive stance and being creative and trying to stay mindful of how will I function going forward is where I'm pouring my energies to. Because I think it's even more threatening to continue to stay in the victimization posture, you know, as it relates to this virus. We have to do things and we will have to push through. So that's how I'm seeing it now.
Andre Watson owns several rental properties in Detroit and Metro Detroit. Andre, thank you for talking to us today, and we really do wish you and your tenants the best right now.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me.